This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. As we head up into our holidays, this is our holiday edition of Queer Voices. Tonight, our poet laureate, Donna Garrett, will be here to be talking about some of her great poetry that she writes and probably do some holiday stuff. Also, in the first hour, we're going to be talking about Brokeback Mountain, which is part of This Way Out, which has a great segment on it. In the second hour, it's the first of our two-part series on Christmas music. Holiday music that J.D. has put together in his series of Queer Music Heritage. All that's coming up on Queer Voices, but before that, we go to London and the BBC World Service News.
BBC News with Stuart McIntosh. The former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has won the leadership of the right-wing Likud party just 3 months before next year's general elections. His main rival, the Foreign Minister Silvan Shalom, acknowledged defeat and pledged his support. The leadership contest followed the departure from the party last month of the Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. From Jerusalem, Richard Galpin reports.
It had been widely predicted that Mr. Netanyahu, a former prime minister, would win this election. He's a charismatic politician who was prime minister in the late 1990s and most recently finance minister in Mr. Sharon's government. He resigned over Mr. Sharon's decision to withdraw Israeli settlers and security forces from the Gaza Strip in August. He's regarded as being on the far right of Likud, opposing any further withdrawals from the occupied West Bank unless there's a referendum in Israel first. In his victory speech, Mr. Netanyahu said the revival of Likud had now begun.
The American military in Iraq has released 8 people who held senior jobs in the deposed government of Saddam Hussein, including 2 scientists originally accused of being involved in developing biological and chemical weapons. The 2 scientists, both women, are Rehab Taha and Huda Amash. U.S. military officials said the 8 who were first detained as war crime suspects about 2 years ago were no longer considered a security threat or of intelligence value. A spokesman in Baghdad, Lieutenant Colonel Barry Johnson, said the cases of some other detainees were being reviewed and there could be more releases soon.
Well, there are about 27 others who are in the category of high-value detainees, individuals who have not been charged, who are going through this process and continue to be looked at and may be eligible to be released in the near future.
President Bush says he'll continue a program of secret surveillance of Americans' phone calls and emails abroad despite questions about whether the practice is legal. Members of Congress from both the Republicans and the opposition Democrats say the surveillance is unconstitutional. But during a news conference at the White House, President Bush defended his decision to approve the program, which he took in the wake of the September the 11th attacks.
Now, having suggested this idea, I then obviously went to the question, is it legal to do so? Do I have the legal authority to do this? And the answer is absolutely. Legal authority is derived from the Constitution, as well as the authorization of force by the United States Congress.
President Bush also described the leaking of the classified program as a shameful act, saying he expected a full investigation. You're listening to the news from the BBC. The chief United Nations official coordinating humanitarian relief, Jan Egeland, has warned that the aid operation in Darfur in Sudan is at risk because of the threat to those carrying it out. In a report to the Security Council, Mr. Egeland said rapes and killings were continuing in the region and camps for displaced people were coming under attack. Here's our UN correspondent, Susanna Price.
The UN's top relief emergency coordinator, Mr. Egeland, told the Security Council the humanitarian operation in Darfur had been remarkably effective, despite overwhelming odds. However, he warned that the terrible reality on the ground was that the killing had not stopped, and for the past 3 months, the situation had deteriorated, with 20,000 more displaced in the last few weeks. Tens of thousands have been killed and 2 million displaced from their homes since the violence began in early 2003, with government-backed militias attacking villages as part of a campaign against a rebel uprising. Mr. Eglin said that in a worrying new development, the camps for those forced to leave their villages were also being attacked. He said aid workers were under constant threat and their operations could be completely disrupted at any time.
The Bolivian socialist leader Evo Morales, at his first news conference since claiming victory in Sunday's presidential election, has attacked U.S. anti-drug policies. Mr. Morales, an Aymara Indian who has pledged to legalize growing of the coca plant, said Washington had used drug trafficking as a pretext for installing military bases. But he vowed to tackle cocaine production, which he said had nothing to do with traditional Andean uses of coca. A seaplane has crashed off the coast of the American city of Miami, killing at least 14 people. Witnesses says as the aircraft took off, it appeared to blow apart before plummeting into the ocean near the city's port. Local jet skiers and surfers joined in a huge rescue operation, but it's unclear if any of the seaplane's 20 passengers have survived. The aircraft was flying from Miami in the Bahamas, and most of the victims are thought to be Bahamans. Crash investigators are travelling to Miami to begin an inquiry. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Falinski.
And J.D. Doyle.
And Greg Chapman.
Deborah Bell.
Jennifer Renee.
Glenn Holt.
And Joan Devlin.
And we're all here in the studio tonight.
We really are all here in the studio.
Yes.
Welcome home from Iowa, Joan.
Yes, where I left 4.5 inches of snow on the ground and not sorry to do that.
Well, and Joan was a complete surprise walking in here tonight.
She was our little Christmas treat.
She must have smelled the chocolate.
Yeah, that was it.
Well, it's great to have you here, Joan. And it's too bad we didn't have enough time to really sit down and do an interview with you, but we'll figure something out.
That's okay.
One of the things we want to talk about tonight, because we got a pretty packed show, which is great, is the movie that just came out.
Brokeback Mountain. And Jack and I, among this group, have seen it, and I thought it was excellent.
It's a fabulous movie. I went there at 10 a.m. on Friday morning, which was the first showing in Houston, and the theater wasn't packed, but it was pretty full.
I went Saturday at 11. It was full. Every seat was full.
The interesting thing is it came out number 8 in the list of top movies this week, but it's only playing in a small select theater.
Something like 69 theaters, and it still made number 8.
Right, but it's per theater.
Yeah.
Is like the highest,
mm-hmm.
the highest.
Right, I read
of course,
that.
That's not how we judge movies anyway, about the popularity. But the storyline is just fabulous. And my good friend Troy was talking about, he actually read the short story before the movie came out. And it was originally in The New Yorker. It was written by a woman. And the short story, the movie is very much true to life to the short story. But the movie, because it's a short story, can expand upon it. And An Lee is just a fabulous director. The scenes of the scenery, the mountains in, I guess they actually filmed it in Canada, but it was supposed to be of Montana,
Wyoming,
was just fabulous, and that was part of the story. Also, the movie takes place beginning in like 1968.
63 through the next 20 years.
So that's the incredible part about that is, and I don't want to give too much away about the movie, but how things back then were that you didn't have the communications like we have it today.
One thing I recommended to a friend of mine who asked me about it. He's very anxious to see it, but it's not in his city yet. I advised him, try very hard not to find out anything more about the plot.
And that's,
let the movie unfold for you as it goes. You'll get more out of it. Don't read any more than you need to hear anymore.
Right, and there's plenty to read about it because there's been so much stuff talked about. It was on the front cover of Zest magazine, or
on the front cover about everything.
Yeah, I mean, well, that, yes, you don't want to say too much about the movie because it tells you so much in the story. It's two hours plus, about two, a little bit over 2 hours.
Right, cried twice.
So I recommend it seeing for everybody.
You cried twice.
Yes.
Okay.
He does not cry easily, so that's a testimony.
So we recommend you right now. It's only playing at the Landmark River Oaks Theater.
Right.
Two of the theaters there, the big one and the smaller one of the smaller ones. It's going to open in more theaters as time goes on, but it's always nice to see it at Landmark because it's one of our theaters. So, J.D., you have a song first.
We have a song to lead into the segment of This Way Out, and the song is perfect since we're talking about Brokeback Mountain, and also that's what This Way Out segment's talking about. The song is by Rick and Andy. It's called Cowboys Are Frequently Secretly Fond of Each Other.
Mm-hmm.
strange impulse out on the plains of West Texas. There's many a young boy who feels things he don't comprehend. Well, small towns don't like it when somebody falls between sexes. No, small towns don't like it when a cowboy has feelings for men.
Well, I believe in my soul that inside every man there's a feminine. And inside every lady, there's a deep manly voice, loud and clear. Well, a cowboy may brag about things that he's done with his women, but the ones who brag loudest are the ones who are most likely queer.
Cowboys are frequently secretly fond of each other. What did you think those saddles and boots was about? There's many a cowboy who don't understand the way that he feels towards his brother. Inside every cowboy there's a lady who'd love to slip out.
Yeah.
Well, 10 men for each woman was the rule way back when on the prairie.
Yet somehow those cowboys must have kept themselves warm late at night.
Cowboys are famous for getting riled up about fairies.
But I'll tell you the reason a big strong man gets so uptight.
Cowboys are frequently secretly fond of each other. That's why they wear leather and Levi's with belts buckled tight. There's many a cowboy who don't understand the way that he feels towards his brother. There's many a cowboy who's more like a lady yet.
Somebody who says what the others just whisper.
And mostly that someone's the first one that gets shot down dead.
When you talk to a cowboy, don't treat him like he was a sister.
Don't mess with the lady sleeping in each cowboy's head. Cowboys are frequently secretly fond of each other. Even though they take speed and drive pickups and shoot their big guns. Bang! There's many a cowboy who don't understand the way that he feels towards his brother. There's many a cowboy who keeps quiet about things he's done.
Is Queer Voices.
Many doubted the movie would ever be made. Once it was to star Billy Crudup or Matt Damon, Colin Farrell or Josh Hartnett. For a while, Gus Van Sant was to take the helm. He was on the front burner at Columbia Pictures, then it vanished. Then it popped up at Focus Features. Remarkably, it survived. Remarkable it is, says This Way Out's Steve Pride, about one of the decade's most anticipated films, Brokeback Mountain.
Based on a short story by Pulitzer Prize-winning author Annie Prolu, the film version of Brokeback Mountain was directed by Academy Award-winning filmmaker Ang Lee from a screenplay by Pulitzer Prize-winning author Larry McMultrie and his longtime writing partner Diana Asana. It's not just a landmark gay film. It's one of the most heart-wrenching love stories that I've ever seen. Set against the sweeping vistas of Wyoming and Texas, the film tells the story of two young men, a ranch hand and a rodeo cowboy, who meet in the summer of 1963 when they work as sheep herders up on Brokeback Mountain. Ennis Del Mar, played by Heath Ledger, and Jack Twist, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, become friends, and then unexpectedly, lovers. But at summer's end, the two must come down from Brokeback and part ways.
You gonna do this again next summer?
Well, maybe not. Like I said, me and I was getting married in November. So, we're trying to get something on the ranch, I guess. And you?
I might go up to my daddy's place and give him a hand through the winter. I might be back. The army don't get me.
Well, I guess I'll see you around, huh?
Right.
Filmmaker Ang Lee is heterosexual, grew up in Taiwan, and was only 9 years old in 1963. So what drew him to this particular story?
Gay ranch hands in Wyoming, they're very far from me. But I think it touched that enigmatic subject of love, I think. And because the strange combination West macho Western and the gay love story, I think the infamiliarity for me reach out very far, and the emotion lands very hard, but the emotion is about missing, about something you don't get. I think that's very poignant, very profound. It's kind of existential to think that two characters spend 20 years trying to go back to where they started in the mountain, in a place that they hardly understand themselves. So that's a calling for me.
Remaining in Wyoming, Ennis does wed his sweetheart Alma, has two daughters, and struggles to eke out a living. Jack, in Texas, catches the eye of a wealthy rodeo queen, gets a job working for her father, they have a son. 4 years pass. One day, Ennis gets a postcard from Jack, who's en route to visit from Wyoming. When Jack arrives, it's clear that the passage of time has only strengthened their feelings. In the years that follow, Ennis and Jack meet up several times annually. They struggle to keep their bond alive and secret from their wives.
You still go fishing with Jack Twist?
Not often.
No, I used to wonder how come you never brought any trouts home. You always said you caught plenty, and you know how me and the girls lack fish. So one night I got your Creel case open, not before you went on one of your little trips. Price tag still on it after 5 years. And I tied a note to the end of the line. It said, "Hello, Ennis. Bring some fish home. Love, Alma." And then you come back looking all perky. I said you caught a bunch of browns and you ate them up. Do you remember? I looked in that case first chance I got, and there was my note still tied there. That line hadn't touched water in its life.
It mean nothing, Alma.
Don't try and fool me no more, Ennis. I know what it means. Jack Twist. Jack Nasty. You didn't go up there to fish.
Ennis Del Mar's inability to move beyond the boundaries of expectations, dictated by time and community, brings tear-inducing poignancy to Brokeback Mountain. Actor Heath Ledger stuns in the stoic role. Ledger says he found things he admired in the man he played.
His potential. You know, he had great potential to love, and I think the one time you really see the potential is with his kids, his children, because that's the one form of love he's really allowed to express. It's not dangerous to him. And with his wife, it just wasn't really love. It was what he thought should be love, and it was a routine that he slipped into because it was conventional, it was traditional, and obviously his love for Jack was forbidden, and he hated himself for it. He punished himself for it, you know. Essentially, he was a homophobic man in love with another man. I guess I always had faith in the love within him a lot more than he did. And I think that's what all the characters, I think, found in him, too, was this the potential within this masculine figure to be kind of vulnerable.
Although Heath Ledger is receiving all the Oscar buzz, Jake Gyllenhaal's portrayal of the outgoing Jack Twist ranks among his best work, but it's not the role he thought he'd get.
I thought that Ang would want to cast me as Ennis and Heath as Jack, just because I felt like Heath was more outgoing and you're used to Heath kind of being a kind of active, less passive presence, you know, and somewhere in my mind, naively, I guess I thought that. And when we were cast opposite what I thought, I realized that Aang recognized in both of us something that I don't think either of us saw necessarily. And that want to always kind of push forward and progress and change things was something in Jack that I felt like I really had too. And that the amount of words he says, I think it's sort of the same thing in a different way. They're like yin and yang, you know, and when they come together, I do think they make a circle. Heath and I talked a lot about it, and I find a lot of just in Heath, him in his own nature, I feel like he carries his heart on his shoulder. You know, he's the kind of guy who's always protecting himself in different ways, but he's really a sensitive guy. And whether or not he's talking or not talking, I think you can sense that from him always. And I just was playing with that. Like, I saw that, and it was like a friendship that we had as actors that was somehow translated to in the movie.
One interesting thing about the release of Brokeback Mountain is that despite its pedigree, and despite being wonderful filmmaking, it's not really groundbreaking subject matter. We've had amazing gay love stories told before. But although this began as another potential low-budget gay indie, the casting of two of Hollywood's hottest young heterosexual stars pushed it into the headlines. And the press began to chant, "Aren't they brave?"
All we were doing was servicing a story.
Actor Jake Gyllenhaal.
I feel like Annie Proulx found this book in some forest somewhere and was like, oh my God, an untold myth. It feels like a story that has not been told, and it's sort of an odd thing that it hasn't yet somewhere. And I felt like, and I still feel like to this day, we're servicing something I think a lot bigger than anybody involved in the film. You know, what I think is really more courageous is people who are trying to be intimate in their real life and who are up against the real things. You know, we just were making a movie for 2 months where we played characters, and I think it's a time where more people are open to this than it might seem.
His co-star, Heath Ledger, concurs.
I think it's a bit silly. I think it's a bit obvious, and, you know, the whole that it's daring and that it's brave, and, you know, firefighters are daring and brave, you know. We're acting. It's like, I'm quite safe right now, you know. I'm not hurt. It didn't damage me. I'm alive. I didn't really have to be that brave. I was just doing something that, you know, I like to do. I was performing and portraying. And it might interest them. I don't know. I think it's a shame that it's built up too much. I think it shouldn't be such a big deal. But hopefully that's what this movie will do, is it'll slowly start to kind of open people's eyes and hearts and imagination. I think it's quite a shame that we live in a world where we have, I think we're moving out of it slowly, where people are so eager to voice their opinions and disgust concerning the ways in which people choose to love one another. I don't know, it just doesn't make sense to me, and I think, I don't know, we certainly didn't go into this movie with any political intentions, like we don't want to change the world, but if it helps someone kind of accept other forms of love, then that's certainly not a bad thing.
Ironically, filmmaker Ang Lee would have had no problem casting gay actors.
A gay actor actually makes my job easier. I would love to, but I gotta go with my best choice by the time I have to cast. I think Heath is a great anchorman for that Western thing, and Jake should be a romantic lead, so I just go for the best possible choice.
As a filmgoer and critic, I can't imagine a better cast or better storytelling. Brokeback Mountain is beautiful, moving, and tragic.
What if you and me had a little ranch somewhere, a little cow and calf operation? Be sweet life. You know, Lorraine's old man, you better give me a down payment to get lost. I mean, he more or less already said it.
No, I told you it ain't gonna be that way. You know, you got your wife and baby in Texas, and, you know, I got my life in Riverton.
That's so. You and Alma, that's a lie.
Oh, you shut up about Alma. This ain't her fault. The bottom line is, we're around each other, and this thing grabs hold of us again in the wrong place, in the wrong time.
And what would Heath Ledger like the audience to take away from the film?
For me, it's a story of how love transcends all. The environment you're born in, the opinions of generations before you, i.e. your family, your parents, your father, and how love is stronger than opinions that are installed in you as a child, and that it can break down those barriers. And and just the power of love.
This has been a conversation with Ang Lee, Heath Ledger, and Jake Gyllenhaal. Brokeback Mountain is from Focus Features. For more information on this or other LGBT films, point your internet browser to prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
He was a friend of mine. He was a friend of mine. Every time I think of him, I just can't keep from crying. 'Cause he was a friend of mine.
This is Queer Voices.
I'm Deborah Bell.
And I'm Joan Devlin.
And here's a friend of ours, Donna Garrett.
Good evening.
Who I always call the Poet Laureate of Houston.
Oh, absolutely.
Donna, how long have you been in Houston now?
Ooh, 27 years.
27 years, but I've only known you about maybe 5, 6.
Yeah.
Now, somehow you were a hidden treasure.
I was out in the suburbs.
Oh, that explains a lot right there.
You know, you can get hung up out there.
And I imagine that where I first met you was at the women's group at the First Unitarian Church.
Yes.
Where you regularly present poetry and open mic, which you invite other women to bring in their poems, and the caveat is either you write a poem and read your work, or something that is your favorite poem, or a poem that you really like, or maybe that you recently came across, to share with the group. And it's very inspiring to people that do write, and sometimes people that didn't even think of themselves as poets.
It's amazing to me the response that we get at women's group. A lot of lovely women come out and do some great writing, and they just take it over. It's always full, and we try to do that the first of the month. I won't be able to do it again until probably May.
March, I thought you said.
March, I won't be back until March 5th.
Okay.
So I generally run the first Sunday, so if I miss it, it'll be April. April, I think it is.
Okay.
April.
And one of the things that's also coming out of that is, you know, as we sit around in our little circle and start talking, it's like, hey, you know, more people need to hear this than just the women at the women's group. So the idea, I can't remember who, maybe Trish said, we need to put this together in a book.
An anthology.
Have an anthology.
Yes.
Coming from the poetry of the women at the women's group. That meets on Sunday mornings at the Unitarian Universalist Church, which I always have to remind everyone is not a church group, but is a feminist group that just happens to meet at a church every Sunday morning, 10:45 a.m.
And they have been meeting for over 25 years, if I'm
30,
not mistaken, 30 years?
30. Yeah, I've been there almost that long. I'm one of the old-timers. And Joan, do you have anything like that in Iowa?
Oh, right, yeah. We have snow and more snow. Actually, Iowa's like about 20 years behind the times in the gay community. They're trying, though. They're trying. Right now, there is a important case going on there. Six same-sex couples have challenged their little anti-marriage law. And it's causing quite a stir there because Iowa runs about 50-50,
mm-hmm.
liberal to conservative,
mm-hmm.
with the Cedar Rapids side being the liberal side and the Des Moines side being the conservative side. So we'll see how it plays out, but it could go before the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
So I'm keeping a real close eye on that one.
Could be very interesting. Have something come out of the Supreme Court that didn't come out of Houston or
yeah.
Texas.
It'd be funny if Iowa became the second state in the country to have gay marriage.
Yeah,
too.
Wouldn't it?
That would be hilarious.
Yeah.
But Donna, you've been traveling. Speaking of people traveling to other places, you traveled to China and are going back.
Yeah, we went to Taipei, and I made a presentation there. I think it was in 2003, and I made it to the administrators at Taipei American School and the PTA. So I spent some time doing some storytelling, you know, sowing some seeds, trying to get an invitation to come back. And lo and behold, this year I got that invitation. So on the 26th of January, I'm going to be journeying down to Taipei to do a month-long workshop with the students of Taipei American School. And what I plan to try and address is global racism. This is going to be a workshop to allow the students to dialogue about racism, and what I want to get from them is writings, and I'm sure I'll be able to get a talented group that I got a chance to meet with the last time, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
About how many students are involved?
Oh, we're talking at least 150 students. We're taking students from the middle school and the high school. We're allowing them all to participate in the workshops, and those that want to participate in the presentation, which will happen at the end of the month-long workshop, they're welcome to do it. I'm taking enough work down to handle things, but I need the kids to come on in and give me some input here.
And what is the diversity of the student population?
Oh, more than 90% is Chinese American. Okay, because that's the focus of the school. But the diplomats' kids, which Pakistan, we've got Sudan. So there are a lot of different races, but the majority are Chinese American students.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a very diverse. It's a diverse crowd, but an imbalanced crowd.
Uh-huh.
So doing the thing on racism, we're going to promote some tolerance, give them some education, give them some things, talk about things that are going on around the world, let them know, you know, how it is in different countries. We want to, you know, illustrate some things. So we want to raise some awareness, create some dialogue.
You must have something really special to add to the dialogue, because not only are you an African-American woman, but you're a woman who grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, during the heights of the Civil Rights Movement.
Well, the presentation is happening during Black History Month. So this whole global racism presentation will be backed by Black History. So I can give my point of view. I've got poetry to support, you know, to give them a little bit, to let them know how it was for me, a Black woman raised in the South and experiencing racism on that level. You know, I imagine we all experience it on some level, but it'll just give them a chance to let them know how it was for me.
Now, you have a poem here. Was this written prior to your first trip or since then?
I've got a poem. All of the poems, most of the poems that I'm going to present, are poems that have been written for quite some time. I think this one was probably written in 1999. I'm going to make a present it at the conference.
And so this is our Hanukkah, Christmas, Winter Solstice, and Kwanzaa program. We're having a little bit of the bitter and a little bit of the sweet.
Yes.
So, Donna, why don't you start off with one of the poems?
I tell you what. I'm gonna start it off with the sweet.
Okay.
I've got a piece here called Welcome. Okay? Let's start it out like this, and then we'll move into something a little heavier. Color me love. Integrate your lovely skin with mine. Come on into me and make yourself at home. Cover me with your affection. Overheat my mental state of being, rest inside of me. I readily extend myself because of my need, because of my love. Loneliness won't rest here if you stay. Keep smiling. It strengthens me and gives me hope. It elates my heart. It elevates my spirit and draws my body to you. Is this attraction? Is this thing I'm trying to verbalize what two people feel when the moon and emotions line up? My heart wants to love you. My need does not lead the way. I want to honor you for what you bring to my life. Thanks for your understanding. I was lost in my quest for love. I never saw you enter from the blind side of my psyche to come and overwhelm me. Stay here with me and receive everything your love has requisitioned from my heart. Loneliness is gone from me, and your love has filled its place.
That's lovely. And that's from October of this year.
Yeah.
Mm, very good.
No Glenn like that one. I'm going to bring you out to Iowa to help melt all the snow.
We can work on it.
Yeah.
And then I've got one that I'm going to present at the race shop, Global Racism Workshop, and it's called Healing. Okay.
Important topic for this time of year.
Especially, yes.
Healing. I am ill, and I must heal myself. I've got to make the effort. I can't depend on anyone else. I say this because I am a lifelong racist. I know me, and I can say this. I know what I'm thinking, and I know that there is no trust. And since I was a child, I believed that whites were unnatural and evil, and hate would always be in between us. Wetback, chink, cracker, spicks, dagos, even my own race. I had stereotyped them all. They all had their place. The things I was taught were to protect me. Through the years, these things affected me. They make it hard to individualize, ever so easy to externalize. Oh, there are good people in every race. You can't judge people by the color of their face. Sure, I think of the past, circumstances and time, and the plight of my ancestors. Yes, it burns in my mind. There are those of other races who are as appalled as me by the slavery in our dark history. When my elders were teaching me not to trust, their elders were teaching them to don't trust us. Now life among us is at a standoff. No communication between us. That is the cost. And I'm at a point in my life I'm trying to interculturize, taking down the walls and inviting you inside. The basics we all share. We are born, we live, we die. We have got to love each other. I tell you, we must try. Through love, I seek healing for me. With my healing, others will see that love made the difference, and love will set us free.
That's beautiful. And I love that word, interculturalize. Is that a word you coined? Have you ever heard it before?
I don't know. I think it's, I make up so many words. If they fit in, I let them flow.
Yes. I think we should think on that word.
Yeah, that's a good word.
It's way beyond multiculture. It's taking the multiculture and internalizing it and looking at it from within yourself and adding aspects of other cultures to your life.
Bringing it in.
One time there was a company Christmas party, right? And everybody was bringing stuff. And one of the people saw the list of what people were bringing. And she says, well, I thought we were having a traditional holiday dinner. And I looked at it and I thought, okay, we have people from the Philippines. We have people from, you know, different places. And I said, this is traditional.
For a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly. So when you realize, you know, some places, it's just like this time of year in Australia, it's summertime. And I have a friend from South America, and for her, this time of year is summer.
Right.
And, you know, it seems very odd for us, the scenes of all the snow and
the white Christmas thing.
You know, it's, and I think it goes into a layer, too, of that European, north of the equator kind of mentality of...
Well, do you know in Italy there's a Christmas witch, which I
is
just
that
found.
Right?
Yes. So I was pretty excited about that. I never knew. I'm Italian. I never knew about that. And the way I found out about it was they were talking about her in Wisconsin, and some right wingers protested, and I was like, "Hey, that's a cool legend."
There could be a witch for everything.
I think there should be.
That's right.
How many days to Christmas now?
Six.
I wouldn't have even known. I just know that it's, you know, how many days until I'm leaving to go visit my mom.
Oh, okay.
It will be on Sunday, and so the 26th, the next Monday night of Queer Voices, we'll be back with something yet different, and then we will be here the day after New Year's. As Jack says, we always seem to get the holidays. So you have something else to share with us?
Well, I've got one Christmas piece that I brought.
Okay.
And I'll share that with you. It doesn't have a name.
Okay.
It's an untitled Christmas piece. In order to have a memorable Christmas, there were things to do if you were meant to be merry. Lots of toys, fruit, plenty of food and nuts, libations, and mistletoe berries. It was the time of year to go into debt, to make sure you were happy and content. Spend all of your cash, run up your credit cards. You had the next 11 months to lament. Now, being broke at Christmas and without a lover, now that was a reason to sing the blues. And those of you that celebrate this holiday know that what I'm saying is true. This holiday has become so commercialized that anyone that has something to sell expects to make money. The true meaning of Christmas has gotten lost, and I don't find this matter to be funny. You see, it is the birth of Christ that we're celebrating here. And without fulfillment of this prophecy, the world would be doomed. We get so caught up in the hype of the season, we forget he had to lie in the manger in order to lay in the tomb. He was born for us and died for us, and for this we should be grateful. It's not about exhausting ourselves or going into debt, things that are known to stress the faithful. This year I'll spend more time meditating and giving thanks, smiling and wishing friends cheer. But I have no intentions of running up a tab that I'll be paying after the start of the new year.
And Lord knows those stores start putting that Christmas stuff up earlier and earlier.
It
was,
you know,
the day after Halloween, and I'm like, I'm sick of it already. Well, I like that point very much, Donna, because it has some good messages. In whatever way you look at your religious beliefs, the messages of love and of redemption and of being there and caring for other people,
yes.
And that message also of what it should really all be about is not necessarily what's placed under the tree.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
And one of the things I want to remind people of is especially to be very careful and be safe, especially with bad weather. I had a car that I had a green light. I was just going along. It wasn't even the middle of changing it, and this car goes right in front of me. And, you know, it was quite frightening to me. And I've had a couple of friends that have wrecks recently. So I'm very concerned about people, you know, being safe out there in all aspects of their life.
Right.
And I want you to be safe on your trip to Taipei, Taiwan, China. I guess
yes.
We have to call it China now because they took it back over or whatever it was.
I'm going over to have a meeting with the managers, some of the managers of our future.
All right.
Okay.
There you go. And Donna Garrett is regularly featured at different poetry readings and at the women's group and here on Queer Voices. And thank you, Joan, for being part of this interview tonight.
Oh, I had a great time.
I'm Deborah Vell, and more of Queer Voices is next.
Cry. You better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list, he's checking it twice. Gonna find out who's naughty or nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. I said Santa Claus is coming to town. Oh. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows if you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. Say, I better be good for goodness sake.
kids and girl and boy alive are gonna have a jubilee. They're gonna build a toy land.
Of course, you know the song, and I hope you figured out that was Melissa Etheridge.
This is Queer Voices.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending December 17th, 2005. Latvia's parliament this week approved a constitutional amendment banning same-gender marriage after 65 out of 100 lawmakers supported the proposal in its third and final reading, and despite criticism from the country's president, prime minister, and foreign minister. Six MPs voted against the amendment. The rest of the legislature was either absent or abstained. The measure must be signed by President Vera Vaika Freiburga to become law, and with so many MPs in favor of it, it would be difficult for her to reject it. The new law reads, "The state protects marriage, a union between a man and a woman, family, the rights of parents and children." It was promoted by a religious-oriented political faction known as the First Party. Same-gender marriage is already prohibited in the country's civil code, but proponents of the constitutional amendment claimed it was necessary to deflect challenges to the law under European Union anti-discrimination regulations. Members of the European Parliament condemned the move as homophobic and backward. The International Lesbian and Gay Association said in a statement that it was appalled and seriously concerned by what it called such homophobic developments in Latvia. The group called on the European Union to look into what they called disregard and disrespect of EU principles and laws. Queer rights have emerged as a heated political issue in the Baltic country this year. A first-ever pride parade in July sparked massive protests. Police had to protect the 100 or so marchers.
Meanwhile, the sixth time was apparently the charm, as the lower chamber of the Czech parliament approved draft legislation this week to establish registered partnerships giving same-gender couples some of the rights of marriage. 86 of the 147 deputies present voted in favor, 54 were opposed, 7 abstained, and 53 others weren't there for the vote. Similar proposals have failed 5 previous times, most recently by just 1 vote in February. The draft law would provide registered gay and lesbian couples inheritance and health care benefits similar to those granted to heterosexually married couples. Leading Czech activist Jiří Romata said his colleagues will continue to work for further couples' rights, but that this is an acceptable compromise. However, even the current measure is not likely to fare as well in the Czech Senate, dominated by the conservative Civic Democratic Party that opposed the lower house legislation.
A new legal front in the U.S. battle for marriage equality has been established in the state of Iowa, where Lambda Legal this week filed a lawsuit on behalf of 6 same-gender couples seeking the right to marry. Iowa has no anti-discrimination laws protecting gays and lesbians, but an anti-marriage constitutional amendment died in the state Senate earlier this year. Similar lawsuits are underway in 6 other states, Washington, New Jersey, New York, California, Maryland, and Connecticut. The Washington case was argued before the state Supreme Court in March, and a decision is expected at any time. Lambda Legal will go before New Jersey's High Court early next year. The lawsuits in New York and California are being considered by state appeals courts, while the Maryland and Connecticut cases are still at the trial level. All the lawsuits seeking marriage equality are being heard in state rather than federal courts, so whatever the outcomes, no appeals can be filed with the U.S. Supreme Court. Queer legal advocates have counseled not pushing for a high court ruling until there are more legal victories at the state level and until there's more public support for marriage equality, which has gradually increased in recent years.
Two gay men in Taiwan's capital of Taipei held what they called an engagement party at a five-star hotel on International Human Rights Day, December 10th. Activists said that the date for the ceremony, attended by both men's families and about 100 supporters, was intentionally picked to underscore the need for laws protecting sexual minorities there. It was at least the third such public ceremony in Taiwan, which does not legally recognize gay and lesbian relationships. The event was called an engagement rather than wedding party because the participants said they were still waiting for the legal right to marry. A controversial bill to allow that has been languishing in the legislature since it was introduced 2 years ago. A spokesperson for the Gender Sexuality Rights Association told reporters that being in a homosexual relationship is not difficult. What is difficult is coming out of the closet and asking for other people's blessing.
A judge in South Korea announced his support for legal unions for same-gender couples in a recently published paper there. Judge Chung Jae-woo of Jeju District Court said the rights of Korean same-gender couples need to be protected to help end discrimination against gays and lesbians. The Seoul High Court recently rejected a bid by a woman seeking alimony from her female partner, ruling that a cohabiting same-gender couple could not legally be considered a marriage.
Austria's justice minister this week appeared to float a trial balloon for some type of national partnerships for gay and lesbian couples. Karen Gastinger, a member of the Center-Right Alliance for the Future of Austria, told the Austria press agency that notarized gay and lesbian relationships would be given the same rights and obligations heterosexual couples have under Austrian law, including rental property and medical decisions, and possibly alimony arrangements if a couple splits up. However, some members of both the conservative Austrian People's Party and Gastinger's alliance, with whom it shares power in a coalition government, have been reluctant to extend marriage-like rights to same-gender couples in the predominantly Roman Catholic country.
Roman Catholic priests and lay people around the world are expressing their dissatisfaction with the Vatican's recent pronouncement barring gay men from the seminary. In an open letter posted on the Catholic news website Adista, 50 Italian clergy denied that being gay had anything to do with their ability to live chastely, adding that, "We consider our homosexuality to be wealth because it helps us to share the marginalization and suffering of many people." Liberal theologians throughout Europe have similarly denounced the November 29th document from the Congregation for Catholic Education. A few high-profile gay priests have resigned their positions in protest. Since the crackdown on gay priests is implicitly a response to the child abuse scandal that has rocked the U.S. church, the reaction from advocates of the victims is most interesting. The Voice of the Faithful group organized rallies in at least six cities to call the attempted gay purge a diversionary tactic. Boston VOTF Chair Dorothy Kennedy called it another attempt to cover up with a false solution.
A gay Zimbabwean has been denied asylum in the U.S. despite the overt repression of homosexuals in his country and the infamous, vehemently anti-gay rhetoric of President Robert Mugabe. William Kumumwe left Zimbabwe for Kenya in 1998 when Mugabe declared homosexuality illegal. He arrived in the U.S. in 2002. In his application for asylum, Kumumwe reported that he had been expelled from school after a gay sexual encounter at the age of 12 and was later arrested for having sex with another student in college. His asylum request was rejected by an immigration judge and then by the Board of Immigration Appeals. That decision was upheld by a divided panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit, where a two-judge majority ruled that Kumumwe's actions, rather than his sexual orientation, were the cause of his problems with authorities. The prevailing side found that the Zimbabwe government's homophobia did not directly threaten Kumumwe, and that his experiences did not meet the definition of persecution as the infliction or threat of death, torture, or injury to one's person or freedom. Dissenting judge Gerald Heaney wrote that an openly gay man should not be returned to a country whose leader has vowed to rid the country of homosexuals.
And finally, along with several other media outlets last week, we reported that the Ford Motor Company planned to stop advertising some of its car lines in gay publications. This came after a supposed meeting between Ford and representatives of the rapidly anti-queer American Family Association, or AFA, earlier this year. The AFA had threatened a boycott of the company because it considers Ford to be too gay-friendly. Ford officials refused to confirm that those meetings had ever taken place, and the numerous media reports about this issue seem to have been fueled primarily by the AFA's press releases about it. After the story broke, Ford management did meet with queer leaders at its Detroit headquarters, and in a letter to LGBT advocacy groups this week, the company said that in addition to its original advertising plans, it would expand the ads to include all 8 Ford brands. It should be noted, however, that ads in gay media represent an extremely small part of the company's overall advertising budget. AFA Chairman Donald Wildman said in yet another news release that hinted of a renewed boycott threat, "Unfortunately, some Ford Motor Company officials made the decision to violate our good faith agreement. We are now considering our response to the violation and expect to reach a decision very soon." While Joe Solomonese, president of the Human Rights Campaign, said in a statement that, "At Ford Motor Company, fairness and equality win out." The company's actions don't seem to have adversely affected its market position. In fact, Ford stock rose slightly on the New York Stock Exchange the day following the announcement about the reinstated ads.
That's News Wrap for the week ending December 17, 2005. Written this week by John Beaupre, Lucia Chappell, and Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valinsky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and Glenn Holt.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Moment coming on.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree. I just want you for my own. My all that you could ever know. Make my wish come true. All I want for Christmas.
just begun.
And that was a rousing start to part one of my Queer Christmas special. That's right, this is only the first part. And if you stick around, you'll hear Christmas music that you won't hear anywhere else. I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. And my show, Queer Music Heritage, is usually only heard on the fourth Monday of the month. But this year, I'm doing two Christmas shows, and I try to bring you gay-related Christmas music that is entertaining and sometimes obscure. I started the show with a fairly new group from the UK that call themselves Four Poofs in a Piano, and their song, Christmas Fairies. They are obviously very out and pack their music with good harmony and quite a bit of camp, as does this next artist. His name is Mark Trevower, but he's known all over Australia under the name of the TV character he created named Bob Down, the Prince of Polyester. That was Bob Down from Australia. D.C. Anderson is a very prolific artist on the cabaret scene as a singer, writer, and producer. From his very nice Christmas album from 2001 called All Is Calm, All Is Bright, here's Department Store's Mean Christmas.
I never knew a Christmas in the country. Place my gifts beneath a Pete's Together tree. Chestnuts roast and turn to charcoal while I'm shopping. Department stores mean Christmas to me. The season gets its start in late October. Plastic wreaths keep plastic pumpkins company. With less than 62 more shopping days till Christmas, department stores mean Christmas to me. I hope someday I spend Thanksgiving morn at Macy's, on a float next to a star from the TV. Post-parade I'll hand out candy canes with Santa, ask his reindeer to explain their games to me. For I'm from Santa's house, it's next to Penny's. There's a line to sit on Santa's helper's knee. When it's my turn, and I whisper, "How's your Christmas?" He says, "Department stores mean Christmas to me." Now, of course, I've not forgotten about the baby who was visited that night by wise men three. But they had to get that frankincense from somewhere. A last-minute, late-night, starlit shopping spree. The Christmas spirit, I don't need the soda fall. I am dreaming of a white sail at my local shopping mall. Tradition finds me making merry at Sears Roebuck. Christmas music sets the mood so perfectly. You forgive me if I'm waxing sentimental. department stores mean Christmas. Department stores mean Christmas. Hark how the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw cash our way. Okay. Department stores mean Christmas to me.
Dr. D.C. Anderson, we heard Christmas Alone by Jeremy Gloff from his album Romantico from 2003. An artist that impresses me a lot is Daniel Cartier, and late last year he released a Christmas album called Don We Now or Gay Apparel. And I think it's a wonderful album, so I contacted Daniel for an interview about it. Daniel, what prompted you to record a Christmas album?
I love Christmas music. Basically, I grew up in a house where we literally were one of those weird families that would go caroling and go to everybody's house. I'm the youngest of six kids. All the kids would go with my mom and dad, and we would go around the neighborhood, and, you know, people would invite us in and give us little Christmas treats and everything, and it was really nice, and it's such a great memory, and those songs are just really well-written songs, even though I'm not religious at all. You know, like when I hear a song like Silent Night, I'm not really thinking about Jesus being born or anything. You know, I'm thinking more just about the associations I have with being a kid and Christmas and all the excitement around it.
I want to hear about the song, Tomorrow Will Be Christmas.
I decided I wanted to write a bunch of Christmas songs. I had just got at my new home studio, and it was around Christmas. This was a couple of years ago. And I just got this idea. I was going to sit down and write a couple Christmas songs. I had never written a Christmas song. And, you know, I just sat down, and one afternoon I wrote like four Christmas songs. Tomorrow Will Be Christmas is actually my favorite one. It's actually a song about Christmas Eve. It's specifically about my favorite time of Christmas, which is the night before. That's when the world seems the most Christmassy to me, because there's still all that anticipation and excitement and the light from the tree, and everybody's at home, and, you know, they're rushing home with all their packages, and people usually stay up really late. That's my favorite time.
Well, the air is frozen, but chills my nose, and the moon, it glows through the pines, and the wind is still, and on every windowsill we walk by, there's a candle burning bright, and your cheeks are rosy, so do you suppose we should go get cozy back? We could hum a song as we let the night roll on towards Christmas. Towards Christmas. And though the streets are quiet, hear the sound of snow under our shoes as we walk on past all the street lamps and storefronts and the quiet homes where sleeping children dream about the dawn. That's when gifts will be open, kind words spoken, neighbors and family passing through. Listen, back home now, it's late. Tomorrow when we wake, it will be Christmas. Oh yeah, it will be Christmas. Ah, it will be Christmas. Ah, it will be Christmas.
How about the perfect place for Christmas?
Well, I've spent Christmas in a bunch of different places. I've spent Christmas, you know, in Los Angeles. I've spent it up north. It's kind of about how it's not really where you are that matters. It's who you're with, you know. That's the most important thing. The place I'm talking about isn't like a physical place. It's more like the place you create with the people you love.
The candles are burning, outside the snow is falling down, and strings of white lights just seem like they want to hang around the tree and tinsel. And I think at this moment what I found is I found a perfect place for us to spend Christmas. Outside it's freezing, the freezing wind drives the driven snow. I bet on the west coast they got palm trees and mistletoe. Baby, don't matter where we are, long as I got you here, I know I got a perfect place for us to spend Christmas. Yeah. Wasn't it somebody who said everybody, said everybody deserved to feel love? Yeah. Well, it's that time of year, I'm so glad life brought us here. Now I'm hoping the rest of the world feels as good as you're making me feel right now. Candles are burning, the carols are sung from door to door, radio stations play the holiday hits we've all.
To hear you write a song about with openly gay lyrics, like maybe Spending Christmas with My Man. I think that's really a gay song.
Well, perhaps that will be on a Christmas album in the future.
That's a challenge for you for next year.
I won't let's see, I just want a big strong Christmas lover.
Massage that a little. Which of the standards did you enjoy the most, the Christmas standards?
Oh, Jingle Bells. That was my favorite one to do. I had so much fun recording that. And I like it because it's not religious. You know, I kind of became this character, like some crazy guy, and then doing all the background vocals.
Right in one, oh, so been slain.
For Queer Music Heritage, wishing you a very, very, very queer and happy Christmas.
In 1976, Chastity Bono was 7 years old and years from being outed by Star Magazine as a lesbian in 1990. But she was a veteran when it came to appearing on her parents' TV shows. On the Sonny and Cher Christmas special from 1976, she even got to sing a few seconds on her own. This is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. And you know, there were a couple songs on tonight's show that just aren't ready for radio, so you can hear them on a longer version of the show at my website. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. Up next is one of the obscure songs I like to bring you on Queer Music Heritage. It's from 1995 and the artist goes by the name Christian Left. It was a cassette release called Left at the Light and it doesn't identify the singer, but he thanks the Lavender Road Metropolitan Community Church, which is in Santa Cruz, California. Here's Christian Left and Queer Christmas Wishes.
a feeling he was gay. He said, I'll grant you 3 wishes, boy, I'll make your day. All you gotta do to have your wish come true is to close your eyes and say, say what I said. He says, Santa Shaft and Mrs. Claus and run off with some gay elf. I didn't read it in the Advocate, saw it for myself. President, she's a lesbian, the First Lady, she's a dyke. And if Jerry Falwell hates it, he can start a hunger strike. Well, underneath my Christmas tree, this hot young hunk of beard, about 5'10" and gorgeous, and he said, hello, my dear. Well, he brightened up my Christmas Eve with his stamina and style. He had like long dark hair, like real full lips, and a bona fide 8-inch smile. I said, Santa Shaft and Mrs. Claus and went off with some gay elf. I didn't read it in the Advocate, saw it for myself. President, she's a lesbian, the First Lady, she's a dyke. And if Jerry Falwell hates it, he can start a hunger strike. Friends down at the Vatican, they don't like queers a lot. So I used up my second wish, I conjured up this plot. I closed my eyes and I thought real hard, and that's how it came to be. That at the second coming, Pope John Paul joined MCC. I think Santa Shaft and Mrs. Claus and run off with some gay elf. I didn't read it in the Advocate, I saw it for myself. The president, she's a lesbian, the First Lady, she's a dyke. And if Jerry Falwell hates it, he can start a hunger strike. And once my eyes grew misty, as I wish for number 3, this one's for all the folks we love struck down by HIV. Well, they'll be dancing up in heaven, God, there'll be a lavender parade. Won't each day seem like Christmas when we find a cure for AIDS? And run off with some gay elf. I didn't read it in the Advocate, I saw it for myself. The president, she's a lesbian, the First Lady, she's a dyke. And if Jerry Falwell hates it, who cares? He can start a hunger strike.
We could use more Christian left. Last May, I was delighted to share with you an interview with Mary Gaucher. Of course, I asked her about the song Christmas in Paradise from her 2002 album, Filth and Fire, and saved those comments for this show. Please tell us about Christmas in Paradise.
Christmas in Paradise is a true story. I took poetic license with it, but there is a community of homeless people that live under the bridge in Key West, Florida, under the Cow Key Bridge. And that's a story of them being under the bridge on Christmas Day and what their Christmas looked like. There really was a Christmas tree tied to the bridge rail, and I was down there writing for over the holidays, and I stumbled across them, and I wrote their story, really.
I love that song.
Thank you. I do, too.
Do you sing it mostly at Christmas?
No, I sing it all the time. I don't see it as a Christmas song. I see it more as a song of how... You know, like I was saying earlier, being
gay... Kind of hope among the loneliness?
Yeah, well, you know, like being gay doesn't make me any different than anybody else. I think being homeless doesn't make them any different than anybody else. They're put together the same way. They're still celebrating Christmas in their own way, you know. They're not removed. They're not... Society may dehumanize them and treat them as objects, but they're not objects. They're human beings under a bridge with a little Christmas tree, and they're going to have their Christmas dinner at the church... and they're passing the bottle around, and they're making the best out of each other being there. It's their family, and they're just like us. They just don't have a home, and that's what I was trying to do, and that's why I love that song, because I think I did do that.
Yes, you did.
David stole a Christmas tree from Kmart last night. Red ribbons and silver bells, angels dressed in white. He tied it to the bridge rail where passing cars could see. He did a little dance up there, looked down and smiled at me. My bed is a lawn chair, cushions keep it soft. Sleep in the open air under the Southern Cross, next to the golf course by the Hyatt Hotel. David, he's a friend of mine, and we get along pretty well. Christmas in paradise under golf course, wear Bermuda shorts and polo shirts. Some play pretty good, some play so bad it hurts. We pick up their golf balls that fly over the fence. We shine them up a little bit, sell them back for 50 cents. Christmas in paradise. Tonight, Christmas dinner's at 5 o'clock over at the Church of Light. They don't care who you are, they don't ask what you've done. Come on down and bring a friend, there's plenty for everyone. Christmas in shouts, Merry Christmas, y'all, to cars passing by.
That was Christmas in Paradise by Mary Gaucher. A couple weeks ago, I wrote to one of my artist friends, Jay Spears, and suggested that the world really needed a gay Christmas song done with his own brand of humor and charm. Well, I was thinking of one for next year, but he rose to the challenge, and a few days later, emailed this song to me, called Jay's Christmas Song.
Santa's here, hitching up the reindeer. I've been such a good boy this year. Before you take off through the atmosphere, let me whisper something in your ear. I want an iPod and an Xbox and a G5 and TiVo. That's all I need to make the Yuletide gay. And with an iPod and an Xbox and a G5 and TiVo, I'll be the happiest boy. The fable of the bouncing baby Jewish boy born in a stable. Atta boy, Santa boy, now we're talking. Come down my chimney and stuff my stocking. With an iPod and an Xbox and a G5 and TiVo, that's all I need. With my brother and make it stick. Can you find me a man who's a perfect 10? Can you make my mama young again?
Well then,
I want an iPod and an Xbox and a G5 and TiVo. That's all I need to make the Yuletide gay. And with an iPod and an Xbox and a G5 and TiVo, I'll be the happiest boy on Christmas Day.
Jay Spears and Jay's Christmas Song. And be sure to check out his wonderful album called Boy Howdy. A British comedian I'm quite fond of is Julian Clary. He's fairly unknown over here, but that's our loss. He had a very camp TV show for several years in the UK called Sticky Moments, and from his 1993 Christmas edition, you'll recognize this song.
Oh, I hope you've enjoyed glimpsing into my world. We'd like to finish, as usual, with a song. And this week it's a song called Walking in a Winter Wonderland. Thank you. Sleigh bells ring.
Are you listening?
And down in the lane,
snow is glistening.
So that's what it is. It's a beautiful sight, and we're happy tonight, aren't we? Walking in a winter wonderland. Far away is the bluebird. And here to stay is a new bird. What's your name? He sings a love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland. In the meadow, we could build a snowman and then pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say,
are you married?
We'll say, no man. But you could do the job while you're in town. In a while, We'll conspire, Russell will perspire,
as we dream
by the fire,
to face
unafraid the plans that we made, walking in a winter wonderland. Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? Down in the lane, snow is glistening.
Beautiful sight,
we're happy tonight, walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird, I don't know where he's gone. Here to stay is a new bird, he sings a love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland. In the meadow we could build a snowman, and then pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no man. But you can do the job while you're in town. In a while, we'll conspire as we dream by the fire, to face unafraid the plans that we made, walking in a winter wonderland, walking in a winter wonderland, walking in a winter wonderland. In the winter,
I better not pout. I can't seem to cry since I found out you've been seeing 9 other guys. It's a nightmare, a bad dream. You're stopping a baseball team. I've made a list and copied it at the store. Now everybody knows you're not nice, you're a whore. I mailed one to St. Nick. Now Santa's elves think you're a drip, because you can't keep your pants zipped, and Mrs. C has crossed you off for good. I've asked Santa to make my wish come true. Hear me now as I relate my Yuletide gift. Can to make you rot and burn so crispy. And that's my Christmas wish for you.
That rather different holiday song was by a singer-comedian named Feely Matias from his 1999 album, Asian Sings the Blues. And I'm not quite sure what to follow that up with. Perhaps Dame Edna and her 1988 ditty, Spooky Christmas.
When sleigh bells ring-a-ling and kitties sing-a-ling, it's spooky.
Spooky.
When trees are snow and folks hang mistletoe, it's spooky. If there's no chance you'll see a present round your tree, it's spooky.
Spooky.
Just lie there in the dark, you'll soon feel Matthew, Mark, and Luke.
haven't forgotten that perhaps the most anticipated queer Christmas album of the year was by our Dragapella darlings, the Kinsey Six. From their new CD, Oy Vey in a Manger, here are God Bless Ye Femi Lesbians and Jingle Bells, Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
God bless ye femi lesbians, may good taste you display. You don't give up your fashion choices just because you're gay. With baggy pants and baseball caps and shirts in disarray, there's something in between a bimbo toy and a playboy, and dressing up just like a 12-year-old boy. Then gay men with shaved bodies and their moisturizers came, bedecked in youthful shirts that bear the Abercrombie name.
They hit the gym in butch attire to banish all the shame that they felt deep down when they were 12-year-old boys with too much poise. So now they want to look like 12-year-old boys.
I do not look like that, you think it isn't right, you say. But if it isn't true on you, your partner looks that way. Since men and women share one thing in common when they're gay, we all seem to look like 12-year-old boys, or we use ploys to attract the folks that look like 12-year-old boys. Laugh, 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 right, laugh, 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 right, laugh, 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 right, laugh, 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 right, laugh.
Rum bum bum bum.
Prison cells, don't ask, don't tell, your job's thrown away. Oh, what fun is Christmas in the army if you're gay? Hey, living hell's AWOL's colleagues to betray. Uncle Sam does not want you to have a happy holiday.
I saw on TV my White House folks to say,
don't be all you can be, except if you're that way. Know what I mean?
Keep the country free. That's what the army's for. Now we'll feel free to kick you out when we're finished with this war.
Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
I've got one more song in the show, but before I get to it, I want to thank you all for tuning in. And I especially want to thank Daniel Cartier and Mary Gaucher for their interview comments. You can see photos of all the artists and recordings on tonight's show and view the playlist at my website at www.queermusicheritage.com. And you can also hear this show and all my past Christmas shows there as well. And if you have questions or comments about any of the music I've featured, you can write to me at qmheritage@aol.com. And I'd love to hear from you. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston, and I'll be back next Monday, December 26th, with part two of my Queer Music Heritage Christmas special. I'm ending the show with another song from Daniel Cartier's album, Don We Now or Gay Apparel, and I'll let him introduce it. Daniel, when you were recording all those old songs, did any of the songs surprise you? I mean, did any come out differently than you expected?
Yes, Auld Lang Syne came out very different. I started crying when I sang it. I realized, wow, this is a really emotional song. I actually started crying while I was singing it.
Should old acquaintance be forgotten and never brought? And no more lay on Zion.
yet for all the names I
again, that website that J.D. mentioned is www.queermusicheritage.org, and you can hear audio file archives there.
You also can hear the second part of this holiday special next week on the 26th of December in the second hour. We're also going to be doing an interview about the movie Transamerica, which is coming out shortly. I certainly want to thank the entire crew that helps put this show together every week, and I'm very much blessed in having all of the people who are involved in this program, and KPFT for allowing us to do this type of programming here. Queer Voices is produced locally, and we have some segments that we do from the This Way Out, which was also just a great part of the program that we're very fortunate to have. So we will see you next week for the second part of the holiday special done by JD, and also the interview on Transamerica, plus the segments from This Way Out. If you're interested in getting involved with Queer Voices, you can email me, jack@queervoices.org. If you're thinking about how you're going to be able to celebrate the holiday, or figuring a way around not celebrating this holiday, you might want to call the Montrose Counseling Center at 713-529-0037, or the switchboard at 713-529-3211. We will see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Before we go, you mentioned a Brokeback Mountain during the program. That's showing here in Houston now.
Yes, it's playing at the Landmark Theater's River Oaks Theater. Actually, it's playing on two of their screens, the big theater and one of the smaller ones.
have been listening to J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, a feature presentation of Queer Voices. Queer Voices is heard each Monday at 7 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Networks station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Women's Group, overcoming domestic violence and abuse in families. Wednesday nights, 5:45 p.m. to 7:45 p.m. The main goal of this therapy group is to help women protect themselves and their children from the harm of domestic violence and abuse. Therapist Kristen Benson, MA, PhD, candidate in marriage and family therapy. You can visit the website at www.talkhgi.com. Check us out. You're listening to commercial-free listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
Can you change your whole life by simply changing your mind? Two-time Obie winner Cynthia Hopkins, backed by her alt-country band Gloria Deluxe and an intensively playful videoscape, takes you on a trip through life with grit, humor, and a good deal of twang. SPA's new Now series brings Cynthia Hopkins in Accidental Nostalgia at Wortham Center on January 13th and 14th. Cynthia Hopkins has performed at NYC's Bowery Ballroom, opening for David Byrne. For tickets, call 713-227-4SPA or online at spahouston.org. The performance includes brief nudity.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.